So the conversation usually goes,
"How are you doing?"
And the response is usually, "I'm fine."
Let's talk about that. So several years ago, as all UU ministers, at least these days, have to do, I went through a chaplaincy program where I served as a chaplain at a large hospital. Now, this was a beautiful hospital. Everything was state-of-the-art, shiny, new. It was a good place to be. Everywhere, in my opinion, except what they called the behavioral health unit. This was located down a long hallway, and then you turned and went down another long hallway, and then at the end of that, there was a nondescript door that wasn't even labeled, and you had to press a buzzer, and there was a camera that would let you in. Everything in that wing of the hospital, that behavioral health unit, was a little shabby compared to what we saw elsewhere. It looked a little bit neglected. There was a sense in the air of the challenge of the nurses working in that situation, the patients who were there often after a major crisis. It was a hard place to be. It was one of the units that I was assigned to check in on periodically, and so I'd go to the ICU and then eventually make my way to the behavioral health unit. Sometimes someone would call from there requesting a chaplain, and so I would go. But what I always felt in that space, despite this being modern times and we seem to think we know about mental health, was there was a sense of shame that hung around that doorway and that wing, and it was hard to shake it off. Well, in that spiritual care unit, there was a chaplain who I befriended, a wonderful, wonderful woman, a few decades older than me at the time. And she was Catholic, but she confessed to me in the little kitchenette one day when no one was around. She looked around and she said, "You know, Unitarian Universalism is really the thing I like." But, she was all in on being a Catholic chaplain. But I appreciated her support as a UU. And we had long conversations. And one of the things she appreciated about Unitarian Universalism was how much we lived in this world and paid attention to what was happening in the reality of people in this world, the challenges that they face. Well, I think it was a Monday, this lovely chaplain was not there in our department. And I asked, where is she? And was told, she's going to be out for a little while. And so I didn't think a whole lot of it, but we did have to kind of reorganize and reconfigure and have someone else take the role that she usually took and so on. And the days stretched into a week, and the week went into 2 weeks, and it was during that second week when I was doing my round in the behavioral health unit that I came upon her, not as a chaplain, but as a patient. There she was, sitting in the chair, seeming not to recognize me in that moment. What I realized then, as I looked at this caregiver, who had so often been in this particular unit herself as a chaplain, as a caregiver for others, was that for any one of us, the difference between good mental health and challenging mental health can be a weekend. It can be a traumatic incident. It can be a moment where things start to change and shift. And that's what happened for her. She had admitted herself during a personal mental health crisis. It was a big lesson for me. Started to change my thinking about a lot of things, from them and us to we. We're all in the same boat. Being a human being is hard, and sometimes it's harder for any one of us than it is at another time. I don't know if you're like me, but we didn't really grow up talking in a healthy way much about mental health. I would hear people whisper about nervous breakdowns and things like that, terminology we really don't use anymore, and kind of was something, again, that there was some shame that seemed to be people would hold on to when they would talk about it. But now, hopefully, the message has gotten out that mental health is a spectrum. It's human. It's not a flaw. We all have mental health. And certainly our own Barbara Wilson, the work that she does, as she mentioned before, in the mental health field, she's one of those people that we have right in our communities who recognize the value of caring for our mental health, for acknowledging the challenges that any one of us could have at any given time. And also, as Ingrid was reading from Barbara Myers in her book Held, she says we're all vulnerable. Ultimately, that's what it means to be human beings. Grief can become depression. Worry can move into a place of deep anxiety. Trauma can become PTSD. Everyone has a stake in this conversation about mental health, whether we experience challenges ourselves or we have a loved one who does. It affects all of our lives. So the question becomes, how do we show up for one another in this knowledge? Well, I think the first thing is, the thing that I had to learn from that experience with that chaplain was to stop making assumptions. Stop assuming that everybody is just fine all the time. Again, we're so conditioned to just, how are you doing? I'm fine. We think, we want everybody to be fine. We don't want to necessarily hear what they're struggling with because we worry we're going to have to fix it and it's too overwhelming and so on. The reality is we don't have to do that. But we do have to be there for the people in our lives. Be there without those assumptions that they're okay. Know that they carry invisible struggles. I think the real shift happens when people are given space to not be okay. When we're able to say, I'm here, and really mean it. And nobody is okay all the time. And that's okay. You know, Memorial Day is a time when we honor those who have given their lives in military service. I think it's also a good time to think about the mental health cost of service. I mean, I certainly know people in the military right now and talk about things like PTSD or moral injury. That's something to really delve into at this particular moment. Depression, there are scars that we don't always see. And it's something to think about today because those invisible wounds deserve as much reverence as visible ones. Also, our theme this month is imagination. We've got paints up here, and we've been talking all month about creativity and imagination. And I think it's important when we think about our mental health to realize that imagination isn't frivolous. It is essential. I mean, especially in these times, it's essential that we have an imagination because that's how we can picture new hope and new futures, new connections. We need to take care of our imaginations and nurture them alongside our mental health because it fuels joy, creativity, possibility. It's all part of this wellness spectrum. A spark of imagination can sometimes be healing, especially when we're in a place where we're not feeling that maybe our mental health is quite where we would want it to be. Barbara Myers talks about how congregations can nurture spiritual engagement. Not necessarily a belief in God, of course, more about meaning, connection, and inner life. And certainly, if bringing God and the divine into that works for you, then by all means, that's welcome in our community. Spiritual engagement can help with hope in peace and comfort, having a foundation that we can draw from in difficult times. You know, on Sunday mornings when we're here and we do, we have maybe a silent moment during meditation, we have soothing words or reflective moment, those are not meant to just fill your spiritual cup completely. They're designed to model for you things to be thinking about all through the week, things to be doing, taking those moments of silence, meaningful silence, finding words or art or whatever it is that nourishes your soul, and really spending a moment with it so that you do feel like you're being refueled in that process. Spiritual practices can take so many forms. I mean, they can be things that we think of traditionally like prayer or yoga, but also things like art, painting, journaling, meditation, prayer, gardening, poetry, music, walking in nature. I've been finding just looking at reading about and looking at videos of animals, for whatever reason, really just soothes my soul these days. There's something that helps me get in touch with something at my core that is giving and loving. I think as I'm wrestling with humanity and all of its complexity, there's something about animals that offers me a spiritual fulfillment. So I'm trying to take that and think of it as a spiritual practice and be more intentional about that. Even a moment of peace can offer us relief from mental pain and struggle. So that's what we can do. The question then is, what do we do for others? Well, the most basic thing is just be present. Just be present for people. I was in a play a couple years ago, and we had kind of a long rehearsal. I was so ready to go home at the end of that. And so I was headed out to my car, and this castmate was coming out of the building around the same time. And I knew she was ready to go home, too. And so I went to my car, and I was kind of putting things in my trunk and trying to get ready so I could leave. And I look over, and this castmate is sitting on the ground next to this unhoused gentleman that we would often see there on the property, and he was sitting there. And she was talking to him, and so I thought, well, I don't know what's going on, and why is she sitting on the ground next to him, and doesn't she want to go home? And, you know, and so I sort of, you know, trying to stall and do some things, and so finally, I saw her get up, and she went to her car to get her drink, and she was headed back to sit next to this man again, and I said, you know, are you okay? Like, what's going on? And she said, I just felt like he needed somebody to sit with him. And so she did. So I drove home after that feeling like a terrible minister, right? Because that was not my instinct at all. My instinct was to get the heck out of there as quickly as I could. But she had it in her in that moment to somehow pick up on the fact that this person needed someone just to be present, just to sit next to them with her full attention on him. I don't know that anything was said that was profound one way or the other, but the point was, she was there. What a gift. It wasn't anything I offered that day, but she offered that to this person. And that goes back to the idea that we don't need to always approach everything as if we have to solve it. You know, sitting with someone who is unhoused does not mean that you are then obligated to be the savior who finds that person a home and figures out what their income will be and all of that. Sometimes you can just offer your presence, your deep listening to someone else, and know that that's actually profound. And that's enough. One of my Unitarian heroes is a woman named Dorothea Dix from the 19th century. And she She went and saw the way people who were struggling with mental illness were treated at the time, and it was horrific, as you can imagine, talking early-ish 1800s. And she set about to reform that situation, and she took on Congress and did a whole bunch of things and helped start mental institutions and really offered a lot of help for people who had been discarded by society before that. And a lot of her work, unfortunately, devolved, as sometimes things do over time. But it was started with absolutely the best intentions. And those first decades, anyway, were far, far superior to anything that had existed before that time. We, as Unitarian Universalists, I think, inherit that same responsibility. And it's twofold. One is to recognize, again, like I said, we all have mental health. We're all always somewhere on that spectrum. And then the second thing is to recognize that there are people who are often very much in need, like the people that Barbara Wilson works with, who are very much in need, who need a level of care and help that sometimes is not available or easy to find or get them connected to. So that is something that is part of our history as UUs, and something we don't want to forget about, a moral responsibility that we still hold. Because let's face it, folks, we live in a very strange and difficult time. This is an era of high tech and low connection. We have greater technology than we've ever had before, and we struggle with the ability to have human, real human connection. One of our greatest challenges. Been seeing ads lately for artificial intelligence, boyfriends, girlfriends, and so on. So, you know, and no judgment, but I worry if we go too far down that path, you know, what reason do people have to get out of the house and meet with other people? We are information rich, but we are truth poor these days. We have every piece of information that humanity has held on to in all of its long history available at our fingertips. Bob's got it on his phone right there if he wants to look at it. It's all right there. And what do? We argue about things, what's true and what's not, things that have been established forever. We struggle with understanding even what the baseline these days is for what truth is. We're in an era that is pleasure-seeking, but joy-starved. Again, we have access to so much that can give us an immediate dopamine hit, right? We have so much at our fingertips, so much available to us. But the question becomes, what really brings us meaningful joy? What really feels joyful amidst all the stuff we have? The opportunities available to us. My doctoral thesis a couple years ago was on the idea that all of us, wherever we fall in the political spectrum, are survivors of narcissistic societal trauma. We've all come through narcissistic abuse through the leadership that we've had and have in this nation. And the mental health struggles that we have are actually a collective experience now. Even with somebody who believes very differently than you, we're all in a mental health struggle over what's happening right now. None of us remain untouched. And we have to reckon with that. Dorothea Dix said, the mind is like a garden. She said, left alone, you've got weeds. Tended with care, you've got beauty. Mental health needs sunlight. It shouldn't be behind an old, battered door with shame hanging about it. It needs sunlight, water, rest, imagination, love. Because if we treat our minds and one another with real care, then we grow not weeds, but flowers, fruits, we grow tomorrow the way that we would want it to be. So I come back to where I started. Ask the question, how are you doing? I'm okay. Well, actually, maybe not. Maybe we could talk about it. It's that simple. We have to be able to offer that invitation and or accept it when it comes our way and be willing to be honest about where we might fall on that spectrum at any given point. And in so doing, we are letting in the light. We are allowing the good that is always there to blossom. We are being true and real and authentic. And we are centering ourselves in love.